Welcome to the Teachers Unify podcast. I'm Sarah Lerner. This episode features Caitlin Haynes. She speaks about losing her best friend and uncle to gun violence, going into schools every day for work, being a mom with the struggles and fears of raising Black sons today, and much more. So we are here with Caitlin Haynes, who is my friend, who I met a few years ago through a mutual connection in the yearbook world. I went to visit her in Iowa and got to see cornfields and all kinds of cool stuff that I had never seen before. And I'm sure you were like super sick of me, like, oh my God, look at that out the window.
Well, I will say cornfields are just a part of my everyday life at this point. So I loved your enthusiasm for the corn.
Yeah, it's like people who get really excited in Florida about like the palm trees and all that. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so hot. But, so welcome to our show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you have a unique perspective because you're not a teacher. You are a yearbook rep. So you are in schools quite often on an almost daily basis. You have two boys, two girls on the way. so we have a lot to get into. But before we dive in, I want you to start.
So growing up, I lived in Marceline, Missouri, super, super small town of about a little under 3,000 people, actually where Walsworth, the company that I work for, is located. So in Marceline, there's not a lot going on as far as activities. You know, we grew up just outside riding bikes. You know, I truly grew up with my mom yelling out the back door, like at dark time, like time for dinner or come home or come in. And you just knew. We called it the East Side, because there was like seven of us that lived on like East Chicago Avenue, and we thought we were so cool. And that's before I realized how big the world really was. So grew up in a super small town. You know, we didn't really have to worry about much at all. There was no significant part of my childhood that I felt unsafe we had talks about strangers, but I wasn't warned about the real world growing up, because it's like we lived in our safe little bubble of this super small town. Graduated from there. Well, let me back up. So we moved away from there. My dad, who also works for Walsworth, he just retired, actually. We moved to Kansas City because he had an opportunity. Lived there for about a year and a half through middle school. And that's when life started to change. Living in a bigger city, I was like, whoa, there is so much more out there to the world that I had no clue. I didn't realize, whether it was racial or, you know, gun violence or any of the things politically, like there was just so much I wasn't exposed to. When I was a sophomore in high school, my dad also became a yearbook sales rep. And then we moved to Central Illinois. And again, it's, you know, it was a whole nother beat of life that you learn about. And so I graduated from in the Galesburg area, played college soccer, kind of in a smaller town in Iowa, and then met my husband. And we now live in the Quad Cities. I live in Davenport, Iowa. About with the Quad Cities as a whole, I think it's like 400,000 people. So fairly good size, especially for Iowa, one of the bigger locations, aside from Des Moines. And then we have two boys. So we have our oldest, who is 17, Amari. And then we have Cohen, who will be 7 in a couple days. And then we have two girls on the way. A lot has evolved in that time frame of, you know, all the things.
We've spoken on countless occasions when you have visited a school and they had a drill or some kind of lockdown or something happened at one of the boys' schools. How do you deal with that as a parent and as someone, you know, who's in the school but isn't actually a part of the school?
My family has been directly affected by gun violence, which I'm sure we'll kind of dig more into on two different occasions. And I would say prior to those events, it was completely different. You know, you just kind of like, oh, this is what we're doing. you trust who you're around. It kind of is what, you know, but after you experience gun violence firsthand, it changes everything. And for me, I experienced gun violence prior to my career at Walsworth and going into schools, and when my youngest was about a year old. So kind of two parts to that. Going into schools, I think that after you experience gun violence firsthand, it is a instant fight or flight scenario you go into when there's a lockdown, or you hear even a loud bang, or we had to lock the door, we had to shut the door, or whatever. Like any sense of like chaos, I will never forget walking into a school and it's, you know, as you go hit the front first door, and then there's a space between the first and the second door where you're met by someone who runs your ID and that kind of thing. And she was like, I'm going to need you to stay right here. And there was clearly an altercation happening past the second door. There was a gun on a student. And I will never forget, just you freeze and you instantly go into fight or flight. But I have had to remind myself to breathe and trust the professionals, as in the educators you're around, that they are trained specifically on this. And that as much as, you know, when you go into that fight or flight, I wanted nothing more than to sprint out the door and run the opposite direction. But I had to remind myself, like, you have to stay calm and you have to listen to, you know, what they're telling you. These people in that moment, the woman I was speaking with, she was highly trained. The officers on the other side of that door, they were highly trained to handle the situation. So being compliant with them. So I think as nerve-wracking as it is just hoping and praying that the school does their due diligence on training their educators and their students and running drills and all of those things to keep everyone safe. Part two with my children, it's just communicating with them. The younger one's tough because he doesn't quite understand why they do the drills they do, but just expressing, you know, you have to listen. His teacher's name is Miss Stewart. Like, Miss Stewart is there to help keep you safe. So if she tells you to do something, you have to listen. If she tells you to be quiet, you have to be quiet. They always tell us ahead of time that they're going to be doing specific drills. And so we can kind of have those conversations. And I think that is helpful, just a clear line of communication, you know, in layman's terms, essentially with him. The older one, he understands more. So it's, again, though, I will never forget his freshman year. He's a senior now. His freshman year, there was a threat made to the school. I don't remember what it was specifically, but several parents weren't sending their students to school the next day. And I asked him, I said, Amari, do you know what the procedure is if someone opened fires at your school? And he said, no, not really. And I was like, it almost makes me emotional thinking about it, because it's like, what? Like, no, this is that we have to understand. So that immediately prompted, you know, a conversation on our safety. And it's this is not funny. Like, this is not a reason to, you know, cut class or get out of class early or whatever the case may be. Like, this is serious stuff. It's more realistic than ever as we continue to see it happening again and again. So kind of two parts to it, but it's just a lot of communication, a lot of trust in who you're around, which can definitely be difficult, but and just trying to educate as many people as possible.
When these situations happened, you know, I remember getting the texts from you, and outside of that, you know, texts about advice on what to do and do I reach out to the teacher and do I do those things? And I'm so glad that I could be a resource and a sounding board, but I really and truly wish that we weren't in this situation, that you in rural Iowa didn't know, you know, not that we didn't know each other, but that right. We knew each other under different circumstances. And I was just a yearbook advisor. And, you know, I didn't have the answers for mm-hmm. these situations, which kind of brings me to my next question about Iowa. I know Des Moines is not close to where you are. It's a few hours away, right?
Yeah, it's about 2.5, I would say.
Okay.
Yep.
And Perry is
a little under 2.
Mm-hmm. So with those two shootings, You know, the shooting at East Des Moines a few years ago. And by the time this airs, I will have spoken with a teacher who was there that day. You know, the recent shooting at Perry High School, are those kind of, I don't want to say isolated incidents, but are they isolated incidents in Iowa, or is there like community gun violence? Like what is going on in your part of the country?
I think much like Des Moines area, with us being considered a larger area in Iowa, specifically where I live, we do have quite a bit of gun violence. My mom actually was here over the weekend from Marceline. Again, like that super small town I grew up in, your own little world. It's almost like a little isolated island, you know. My stepdad, I will not forget, he turned on the scanner for whatever reason. And he was like, there was a shooting and it was like on 3rd Street. And I'm like, yep. And my mom's like, you don't live in a safe neighborhood. And I'm like, Mom, listen, like, I understand that's very scary. That's nowhere near where I live. Like in retrospect, yes, it's in the same city technically, but neighborhood wise, it's one of those things that I hate to say we've grown accustomed to, but you hear about it all the time. So I think that gun violence is very relevant here. It happens way more frequently than it should. I would say on a daily basis, some sort of gun violence. Perry, I don't know much about Perry. I think it is a smaller community. So I do wonder if that was more, and sounding like I don't want to speak for, you know, I'm not that educated on the situation, but it does sound like it's kind of a little more isolated. Des Moines, it is a bigger area like here. So, you know, I don't know. And it would be, I'm excited to hear, you know, that educator, that teacher's insight on that situation.
I know you are surrounded by cornfields, but are there a lot of like hunters in your area? Like, is the gun violence predominantly like handguns or like hunting rifles?
Yeah. So predominantly handguns within the area. Okay. So our area is unique because, okay, we're 4 cities combined, 2 on Illinois, 2 on Iowa to make the Quad Cities, right? So it feels like you're in the city. However, you drive 10 to 15 minutes outside of town in the right direction, and you're in smaller towns, Durant, Iowa, you know, Wilton, that's my territory. And those schools, I mean, have 700 to 1,000 people in them. You have the hunters, you know, the deer heads on the walls, like all the things. So it's a mix, and it's interesting how it can flow from one. It's like night and day, two different worlds within a 10-mile radius.
That's crazy. I remember when we went to the schools together, how small they felt, but I'm also coming from a school that's, you know, like a college campus with 3,400 kids.
Right.
And I live about a half hour outside of Fort Lauderdale. So clearly very suburban, very happening all the time. You know, if I drive 10 minutes in any direction, I'm in suburban, urban city life. So there's no rural here, you know, unless you drive hours out of like this metropolitan area. As someone who has spent time, lots of time in schools, both as a parent and as a yearbook rep, like, what do you think that teachers can do? And school staff, not just teachers, but school staff too, to use their voices in times of tragedy. You know, having 2 fairly recent shootings in Iowa, plus whatever community gun violence and other forms of gun violence that, you know, makes its way into schools. Like, right. What do you think that school staff and teachers can do to speak out about these things?
Well, I think first and foremost, specifically speaking for this area, you talk about gun violence and gun control, and everyone freaks out. They freak out. They're trying to take our guns away, especially the hunters. They're, you know, I live in a very Republican state. I think for me and my personal opinion on it, it's not necessarily we're trying to take your guns away, but we need control. We need control. And I think that having our educators come forward and speak about the real fears they have, because you are seeing school shootings happening more and more, being honest and open and expressing what they have to do to save the children. And I think just advocating on what gun control really means, it's just, a disheartening topic at times because it's so, I'm trying to think of the right words to put, you know, it all together, but it's so like nonchalant anymore. Like, oh, it's a school shooting. And it's like, I'm, you know, we have someone come, a politician come on and say, you know, sorry that happened. And then it's like, it's forgot 2 days later until trial or whatever the case may be. And then it becomes like, you know, this big event again. And I think it's just as an educator, they do everything they can to keep our children safe. And this is an added layer that I truly can't imagine facing and having that responsibility on our shoulders too. And I think just being open and honest, and education is key. So many people are ignorant. I mean, at the end of the day, I hate to say it. Like, and I don't mean that in a rude way. I mean that in a knowledgeable way. We need to take the time to read more books, read more, you know, educate ourselves. We all just so freely speak. And it's like, hey, I'm all here for opinion, but let, you know, back it up with, with some facts. So I don't know if that even answers the question, but what I would like to just see is, you know, educators to continue to stand and people like you to advocate and bring more awareness, I think, more than anything.
Are you ever nervous to go into schools given your past experiences, which we're going to get into in a minute, like, and the experiences you've had in schools as a rep? Are you ever nervous going into a school?
Yes, every day, to be honest. You know, you walk in and like I said, you just hope and pray that nothing happens. And if it does happen, I have such a fear of walking through the hallways. A lot of the times I'm not there during passing periods. I'll try to get there right before, or I'll get there right after I'm going to, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like, I feel like when you hear about these school shootings, you hear about who gets caught in the hallways. And that for me is like, it just runs through your head. Constantly. I'm constantly looking for exits. I'm constantly looking for like safe havens, essentially places you could hide, the nearest classrooms. I mean, there, some of the schools I go into, it's like, it, you know, the buildings are like crazy. You have all these random hallways, or sometimes they're wide open, or you know, whatever the case may be. And so it's just constantly keeping your head on a swivel. It definitely brings a sense of fear and it makes you nervous. That's for sure.
I remember when we had dinner at a restaurant, and I don't remember what it was, but it was in Davenport, and like two of the walls were all windows. And I think I was there, it must have been 2019. So like it was still close to when the shooting happened at my school. And even, you know, we're, by the time this airs, the six year mark will have passed. But then and now, like, I am acutely aware, like you said, of exits and all of that, but also like sitting with my back to a window and like, where am I positioning myself at the table? And I felt that night like I was being like super antisocial and like kind of with like resting bitch face, which is also kind of my face. But I was uncomfortable because I couldn't find a place to sit where I would be comfortable. And I didn't fault you. Dinner was delicious. It was lovely company. But it's things like that, being stuck out in the hallway or not knowing where to sit, where you are going to feel comfortable and at ease. I think these are things that people who haven't experienced gun violence of any kind, like it's stuff that they don't think about because they don't have to. But, you know, like I said, 6 years later for me, all these years later for you, it's still there. And I think that's part of the conversation that isn't always had, because mm-hmm. it's just this like unspoken. I know you've had two instances and experiences with gun violence. I'm going to let you decide which one you want to talk about first. And then we can kind of go from there.
I'll talk about Jenny first. That happened first in my life. That was in, what, 2018. Just so crazy to think now because time stands still for no one. So it was Easter of 2018, the night before Easter at this point. And my friend Jenny, it was her. She had just had her birthday. We had a bunch of friends in town for a baby shower. Our friends lived out of town in Texas at the time. So there's a group of us together. And then several people decided, you know, we'll go out. I think there was like a basketball game. It was like March Madness or something was happening. So, you know, all the guys wanted to watch the game at the bar. And so we had went, and I actually left early because this is just so crazy to me. My mother-in-law wasn't feeling well, and she wanted me to pick up the kids. And that's so weird because like that never happens. Like she will keep my kids all the time. My dad was out of town in Boise visiting my brother. And it's like, it's just very rare that we don't have someone to keep our children. Like that's just bizarre to me. So I had left early. My husband stayed. We were staying at my dad's house at the time. And Cohen had just turned one in February. This was end of March going into April, April 1st. I was texting Jenny and she was talking about, you know, we're good, everything's good, we're having a great time, but I think we're gonna leave soon. And then my husband Mark had texted me and he was like, the vibe here is just off. Like, I don't know what's happening. Like, we're gonna head home. I'm like, okay. And then I just had this pit. It's weird how your senses kind of like your intuition just kind of kicks in, this pit in my stomach. And 7 minutes later, after my text from Jenny, 7 minutes later, I get a call from a random phone number and I'm like, what is going on? And I'll never forget this phone call. I'm like, hello? And it's Mark, sheer panic. And he's like, Caitlin, Caitlin, Caitlin. And I'm like, what is happening? And he was like, you need to brace yourself. You need to brace yourself. And I was like, what happened? Like at this point, like get to the, like, what is going on? And he was like, Jenny's dead. And I was like, what? I was like, I just talked to her. And he was like, Jenny's dead, Caitlin. And I was like, no, she's not. And he was like, she was shot. And I was like, then why are you calling me? Like, you need to be on the phone with an ambulance right now. And he was like, Caitlin, there were three shots and she got shot in the head. And I remember him telling me, do not come down here. And I hung up the phone. And Amari was there at the time. And I took Cohen in there and I just like put him in bed with Amari and I ran out of the house. And I don't remember even driving there. I think I called my mother-in-law. I must have called my mother-in-law in between because she ended up at my dad's house when we got home. And I remember pulling up to the bar and there's police lights everywhere. It was like just chaos, like a scene out of a movie, like see Mark sprinting towards our car. I got out and I see Jenny on the ground and I like ran towards her and he grabbed me. And I remember him grabbing my face and he said, it's not safe here. We have to leave. And I said, I'm not, we can't leave her. And he said, we have children. We have to leave. It's not safe here. And I remember getting in the car and we were driving away and we are stopped at the stoplight in front of the bar. And I see her parents driving towards us. And I just, it was just like time stood still. That was my first encounter with gun violence. And, you know, Mark, he took him a long time to talk about it because he went to the bathroom. Jenny, her husband, and our other friend were walking out the back of the bar, which is where the parking lot is. So they were almost to the car. They're 15 feet from the car. Mark was walking out the front door for whatever reason. Again, how into it, you know, he walked out the front door and he heard the three shots. So he said he heard pop, pop, pop. And he was like, what? And he turned the corner and then he saw one of our friends that was walking with her, just like hysterical. And he was like, they shot her, they shot her. And Mark was like, who? And they're like, Jenny. And Mark even said, like, Jenny who? Because it didn't register at all. So that was like our first experience with gun violence. And her, I mean, that was my best friend. Like, our boys are 6 months apart. So that it was tough. It's tough. It's still tough.
I mean, I want to, of course, start by thanking you for sharing that because I know how difficult it is. Was it random? Did the shooter know her?
So he knew her, did not target her, and which was really confusing for a long time for us until we got to court and it all like kind of started to unfold. So I guess what happened, so if you remember at the beginning of the story how Mark said like the vibe was kind of weird in the bar, so I guess what had happened is he got out of jail the day before, by the way. So he's a felon with a gun. Got out of jail the day before, got an argument in the back of the bar. A fight kind of broke out. He left. And then his friend called him and was like, come get me. They jumped me or something. So when he pulled up to the back of the bar, his headlights were facing the back of the door, back door to the bar. And he saw his friend, I guess, with blood. I don't even know. This is what I'm trying to recall from like the trial. And he got out and he just fired 3 random shots. So one hit the back of a parked car, like in the trunk, one hit Jenny, and one hit a car that was actually passing by on Main Street. And the bullet got wedged between the passenger side window and the rear window on that piece of metal that separates the two. So, but he, I mean, Mark knows him because they're the same age. They played basketball together. So like they all knew each other. And then he ran past her. We found this out in trial too. He ran past her body and looked at one of the guys that was with us who he played basketball with too. And like threatened him, like pretty much like, don't say a word or I'll like come for you. I don't know. It was a whole thing. And even now, this is kind of like coming off topic a little bit, but like he's obviously in jail for the rest of his life. And he has a website like going to prove his innocence. And he's trying to meet a faithful, like good woman and like all of this. And I'm like, you are, again, a topic probably for another day, but it's just like, come on. So that was our first experience with gun violence, though.
Clearly that impacted you then and now. Before we get into, unfortunately, your second instance with gun violence, how did Jenny's death and, you know, the years since, like, how has that changed you? Have you done things to honor her? Like, how has it impacted your life?
You don't think stuff like that can happen to you or people you know or impact your life until it does. And I know everyone always says that and it sounds so cliche, but it's so true. And I'll never forget the next day when the police report came out and they posted it like on Facebook and associated like her name to what happened. And it was like, holy shit, like this is real. And you know, that night, Mark shut my phone off because people were just calling and calling and calling because everyone knew either we were together or I knew what happened or, you know, and it's just, I since that day, like when you lose your person, especially in like female best friend form, it changes your life so much. You know, I remember sitting in my closet crying, like, how am I ever going to get ready again? Like, you know, she's my person. And we have boys, like I said. So she has a daughter, Riley, and then her son, Riker. Our boys are 6 months apart. And so it was like we went through pregnancy together. Like we did all these things together. And it's like when you lose the person you talk to every single day, she would call me after she got the kids from, you know, daycare. And we'd talk on the way home. And I was a sales rep. So it's like I was always on the road. And you lose a piece of you. And that hurts. And it's hard to find a new normal. And so I think that was the first part of it. And then the second part is you're so angry because you're like, how the hell does that happen? And she was the kindest person in the world. Like, she's the person you're on the phone with and she's in the McDonald's drive-thru having a full conversation with the person taking your money. Like, oh my gosh, you have a great day. Like, see you later. I'll see you next, you know, and like, she just made everyone. And so it's like, you feel like, you know, you instantly go through your grieving process and anger was a big part of that for me and understanding and you don't understand. And then resentment, there's just so many components moving, you know, forward in the years that have passed. Our first trip, Mark and I's first trip, we went to Vegas, after her passing. And I remember I was never an anxious person. I'm a basket case. Even to this day, it's gotten better. But I ended up having to go see someone and be medicated for a while to try to work through those feelings and those emotions and that anxiety and that fear. Because like you talk about sitting in that restaurant in those windows, I remember getting on that airplane and I'm like, if this thing goes down, like our kids aren't going to have any parents, like I'm going to die. Like, and it's just constant fear and anxiety. And then like being in Vegas, I'm like, okay, the shooting that happened there, you automatically like that triggers in your head. And then you're like public places and you look around and you want to, you know, find the exit routes. And it's just a constant rabbit hole of like fear and anxiety and all the things. So I think for me, the biggest thing that has lasted with me is aside from just like missing her and that everyday pain of like, why, is just the fear and anxiety that I've had since then.
I know you said that you were medicated for a time. Have you gone to therapy, or have you, you know, spoken with someone since then about your feelings and trying to process all of this?
Yes. And I know you and I've talked about this too, when you were visiting me and you suggested a few things. I initially went to therapy, and where this happened at is 45 minutes from where I live on the Illinois side in Galesburg, Illinois. And it's like, I mean, when this happened, it was on the news. It was everywhere. I remember being at the gym, like, cause my husband's like, just even if you just go sit, like do something that, you know, is in your norm that makes you feel good. And I remember looking in the mirror at the gym and I saw her reflection on the TV behind me, like her face. And I was like, you freeze. And it was in that moment where I lost it in the gym. And I was like, I need help. Like I need help. And I remember going to the therapist, and it was, oh, you knew her? Oh, she was your best friend. Like, and I was like, and so then the search to find a new therapist, I felt so defeated by. So no, I have not talked to anybody since then. I do know though that it would still benefit me to this day. And it's just doing the, you know, the research to find the right fit. But I actually had talked to my OBGYN about it. I, you know, I'd had an appointment, like a checkup or something. And she was like, how are you doing? And I remember her just asking me that, and I lost it. And this poor woman was like, what is happening? And I told her about it. And she was like, Caitlin, like, I'm going to prescribe this to you. It's low dose. And just think of it as like taking off the edge. You put a little bit in your cup each day to just take off the edge, to help you sit and think and process. Because I think that when things like this happen to you and trauma happens to you, you kind of lose that ability to think rationally and process things.
Clearly, we have spoken about this, and anyone who's listened to the show knows I am a huge fan of taking care of your mental health. I have been in therapy on and off since the age of 5, certainly not at that point related to the trauma. But I think just talking with someone, even if nothing is happening in your life, is important. And I take meds for anxiety, and that's okay. I am perfectly fine doing that, because it evens me out so that I'm tolerable to people. You know, I'm not this neurotic lunatic. I'm like neurotic lunatic light, which is part of my charm.
Same.
which is why we get along so well.
We are.
Exactly. I do think that finding the right therapist is key. And it's a lot like going on a bunch of really shitty first dates until you find the one that fits and makes you feel good and comfortable. And the right therapist, I mean, it makes all the difference. Like, I was seeing one and she was wonderful, but after the shooting, she just wasn't what I needed at that point. Like, she was great prior with all of my normal neuroses, but then add this to it, and I knew I needed someone who was trauma trained and trauma informed, and, you know, knew how to deal with something like what happened to us here. Right. So, you know, for anyone out there who's trying to find the right therapist, if you find that person on your first try, like, you're lucky, and like, go play the lotto. But I mean, honestly, but for the rest of us, it is a lot of hunting and searching, and that's okay. The part of it that sucks though is, just like on a first date, having to like reintroduce yourself and share the story over and over and over again, which is exhausting. And, you know, can turn people off. Right. So I hope that when you're ready, and I assume it will be after the babies and your hormones regulate and you are back to being you, that you will reach out and find someone who will help you, not just to process everything with Jenny and all of the other things, but, you know, life with twins and a 7-year-old and a college kid.
Yeah.
I think we can all benefit from therapy.
We all need a little therapy. If that's right.
No kidding. How has gun violence impacted your family?
So that was our first kind of like introduction into gun violence, I would say. Amari was old enough. He knew Jenny. So he was well aware. Cohen, being one, would talk about Aunt Ninny, is what he called her, Aunt Ninny, all the time. And I was like, that is so bizarre. But Cohen at seven now knows, he doesn't know everything, but he's aware. And then it was last year, actually. Was it last year? We're going on. Yeah, it's been a year. So it's so PTSD, to be honest. Mari had homecoming, and he, you know, they all went to a friend's house after for like a bonfire. And I went to pick him up. And my mother-in-law was here. My father-in-law were here, was here. So Cohen, my father-in-law, and Mark were at home. My mother-in-law and I went to get Amari, and Mark calls me frantic. And it was like, I'm not kidding you. It was deja vu to what had happened. And I was like, my first thought was something happened to Cohen. And I was like, what? Like, you know, and he was like, it's Uncle Timmy. And I was like, Uncle Tim, what do you mean? He was like, he's dead. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, he was shot. He's dead. It was literally the same phone call that went from Jenny to Uncle Timmy. Uncle Timmy is Mark's uncle, his dad's brother. He lived in Denver. Such, again, a wonderful person. You know, the brightest, loudest, most contagious laugh in the room. He was at, I want to say, 62nd birthday party. Was leaving because he wanted to make it home before the 10 o'clock news. He was retired from the state of Colorado. He wanted to make it home before the 10 o'clock news is what he had told people. And he was walking to his car, and he turned his head to say goodbye to someone, and someone fired from a car, hit multiple people, but he was killed instantly. And so for us and Cohen, we had been, actually, we went to Destin, Florida for a family vacation. We do a family vacation almost every year with Mark's family. And Cohen and Uncle Timmy were buddies. So especially for him, it was like, wait, why is this kid, you know, what? Like, he didn't understand. He was like, but that's how Jenny and Nanny, you know. And then our oldest, he was like, why does this keep happening to us? Like, we don't do anything wrong. Why does this keep happening to us? And I couldn't answer him. And that's still a challenging question for me, because it is. We're not people who put ourselves in bad situations. Wrong, call it wrong place, wrong time. I mean, call it the world we live in, you know, and then it instills fear. Amari, especially, for a long time, was scared to do a lot of things because he was like, what was it, my next? Like, how is it, you know, like, how does this keep happening to us? And so for my family, I mean, we've just been directly impacted on every level now. Once you know, when you hear it, you don't want to call it a fluke when it happens the first time, but you're like, okay, you can justify wrong place, wrong time, shitty circumstances. When it happens again, you're like, hold on a minute. And so I think for my family directly, it was just a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear, anxiety. I think we're all kind of aware of our surroundings a lot of the time. So yeah, it's been interesting, especially as the kids grow and their, you know, their thoughts on it.
Your husband, Mark, is Black. Your sons are both mixed race. How do you approach this with two Black sons about the world we live in and staying safe and conversations that I don't have to have? Well, I have them, but different conversations with my white son and my white daughter.
I think hard on this question a lot, but it kind of goes again back to just educating, clear communication. You know, you watch, and when, like, with the George Floyd case and all of those things, and people say, you know, when do our Black children go from being cute to being a threat? And I think that's just not to scare them, but to educate them. There becomes a point in your life where you're not a 6-7-year-old cute little boy anymore. You are a 17-year-old grown man who is a threat when the world looks at you, I should say. Especially for Amari, it's, you do not get to be upset and lose your cool and act fool, essentially, in public places. Like, some people may do that. White men may get away with that. You are not someone that can do that. You know, so it's just about being calm, cool, and collected at all times, despite the internal battle you may be feeling and emotions you may be feeling at that time. Not knocking police officers. My brother was one for a very long time. I have the utmost respect, but when you get pulled over, I have experienced this firsthand with my husband. Your hands are where they can be seen. You don't move. You don't speak unless you're spoken to. You are polite. You ask if your wallet is in the center console. Hey, may I reach in the center console to grab my wallet? And you wait for them to say yes. And that just goes, you know, with anything in life. We were at a gas station. I'll never forget this. You know, all these crazy things that you just compile in your head. On New Year's Eve, we were at a gas station and I had taken Amari and one of his friends to get candy. They were little, I mean, middle school probably. And fireworks were going off and a white male looked at my son and said, "Don't worry, those aren't gunshots. Those are fireworks." And I was like, "What did you just say?" And as a little boy we were buying candy for New Year's Eve, you know, like he's just looking at this man like, "I don't know what that's supposed to mean." And I'm fuming. I'm like, "Go to the car. Just go to the car." So it's things like that where you just have to have your head on a swivel and be aware of your surroundings at all times. And again, like you have to be able to walk away from some situations. And me being a white female prior to, you know, getting with my husband, I didn't realize that. So the first time we were pulled over, my husband and I wasn't combative, but I was like challenging the police officer a little bit. And he was like, "Be quiet. Like you have to stop talking." And he was like, "You don't understand." And then I'll never forget, the police officer was like, "I need your passenger's license and identification." And I was like, "For what? I'm driving." And that's when my husband is like hitting me, like, "Be quiet." And it was in that moment that I was like, "Holy shit. Like, this is real. Like, this is real." So, you know, yeah, again, communication and education are everything. And just, we're not telling this to scare you. We're telling you this to keep you safe.
It's just so wild to me that Amari and my son David are both seniors. I mean, David just turned 18, but they're effectively the same age. And while we're having similar conversations, the undertone of the conversations are very different. And it's just so sad and like sick to me that these are conversations that parents of Black children, whether they're white parents, Black parents, polka dot parents, it doesn't matter, you know, that you have to add that extra layer because of the color of their skin. And that man said, "It's not gunshots, don't worry." That my friend has to tell his son, who's now 21, you know, when you leave the house, be very aware of what you're wearing, you know, don't wear a hoodie, don't do this, don't do this. And it's just, I don't even have the words for it. But, you know, then I think about your little girls that are on the way and similar conversations that you'll probably have to have with them. And this shouldn't be the world that we live in, you know, that you have to have this extra layer of fear for your children because of what and who they look like and where they come from. Outside of these conversations that you've had and fears and all of that for your kids, your dad is gay. Do you also have fear for him? And how do you view these issues of gun violence as they also impact the LGBT community?
I do have fear. I mean, how many, you know, shootings, I can't even tell you now how many shootings we've had at nightclubs of LGBTQ plus communities. And we talk about pride and, you know, wanting to participate and do all those things, but it crosses my mind, well, what happens when someone open fires? Because they can't accept you for who you are because you're quote unquote different. It's just so sad to me. Like you just said, my children, based off their race and these conversations we have to have, but now it's also my father who can't authentically be himself in public at all times because of who it's going to offend. Not only gun violence, but what's going to be said, or, you know, there's just so many layers to it. And it's just a shame that we live in a world where we're so worried about what's, you know, John Doe across the street is doing, even though it doesn't, you know, directly impact my life, but I'm going to show hatred on that person. And it's scary, you know, but my dad, I will say, he is someone who unapologetically is himself. And I think that's beautiful too. And I think it's beautiful to have someone like that, that isn't afraid to go out and stand, you know, much like you, to make a change and advocate and be authentically yourself, and no matter what that brings. I think that's beautiful. And I love that I have the opportunity to be around so many people like that. And all I do is support them. You try to be as safe as possible and be prepared for anything that may happen at any given time. But yeah, it's scary. It's very scary and nerve-wracking.
I think about my family and my life, and certainly not to make this about me, but we're Jewish. Mm-hmm. And with the rise in anti-Semitism, I mean, it's always been there, but as of late, it's gotten completely out of control. And I think about that, not just as a gun violence survivor myself, but, you know, when I go to services, there is an armed guard outside of the synagogue.
My gosh.
Yeah. And it's not just for like the high holidays, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's
right.
Like for Friday night service or Saturday night service. And, you know, my son plays hockey and he's in South Carolina playing for a junior hockey team. And he's got his Jewish star like inside. He never takes it off, and it's inside of under his jersey. And I guess it like came out during a game, like the way he moved or whatever.
Sure.
And somebody on the other team made this horrible, horrible comment, like, your family should have died in the gas chamber or something like that. And David's like, the hell? Like, he's
right.
literally in the middle of a game. But, you know, it's things like that. Like, I worry about him up there. Is someone going to know he's Jewish and target him,
right. Mm-hmm.
you know, or God forbid, try and harm him in some way, or,
right.
you know, like, am I safe going to services?
Mm-hmm.
Am I, you know, my cousin is gay. He mm-hmm. and his husband got married in September. They live in Buffalo. He's a news reporter. Like, he's been on the show before, you know, very, very out and proud. But,
yep.
you know, when he goes to Buffalo Pride, I am nervous for him and I'm a million miles away. There are people out there who don't like things that are different.
Right.
You know, being Jewish, being gay, being Black, being mixed race, being whatever.
Right.
They don't, and you can't live your life in fear, but at the same time, you can't be so oblivious to what's going on that, you know, there have been Saturdays that I haven't gone to services because I was just nervous or anxious or, you know, like I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't feel settled going, but I shouldn't have to live that way. Your dad should feel safe doing this. Your sons, your husband, your
yeah.
insert person here should feel safe doing this. And it's so enraging that this is what everything has kind of come to,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for some people, unfortunately, these situations have hit close to home too many times.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing that I like most about you, even though you've dealt with all of these obstacles to overcome, is how resilient you are and how open you are to talk about these things and share about them. And like, when I met you, when I came to Iowa, that was the first time that we had ever met in person. Like, we had spoken on the phone and done like Zooms before.
Right.
But I felt this like instant connection with you. And I knew that we were going to be not just fast friends, but lifelong friends. And you
absolutely.
opened up and you shared about Jenny. And like, I had just met you like 3 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the fact that you keep going and keep going into schools and keep talking about your friend and Uncle Timmy and all of these things, it says a lot about who you are and your character and your resolve to keep going. And, you know, I've met your boys. I can't wait to meet your girls. I've met Mark. I love your dad. Like, you definitely have a wonderful family and you all love and support each other. And even though you've been through two horrible tragedies, you know, you all love and support each other and you all get through it together, which is really what it's all about. You can't move forward because there's no moving on, but you can't move forward if you don't have people in your corner supporting you, whether they've gone through it with you or not. Right. And you have Absolutely. That. And that's mm-hmm. wonderful.
I'm too hormonal for this, Sarah.
I know. I'm sorry. We're going to stop.
It's okay. No, I can't agree with you more. And, you know, and my husband, especially, you know, with Jenny and Uncle Timmy, going to Jenny real quick, like they grew up together. Like they've known each other for a very long time, since at least middle school. And I remember just him saying, like, we can't stop. Like we can be upset. We can feel all the things we need to feel. We can do everything we need to do, but we can't stop. And much like I feel like when people pass, especially unexpectedly and traumatically, it's like they would never want that either. And I think that's what fuels me, is especially Jenny. I attest to who I am as a mother a lot to, like, because of her. Like, she was the best mom in the world. She's the best person. She made everyone feel good. So it's like, what happened to her is terrible, but I also feel like doing justice is continuing on and bringing part of her and her personality and all that she was out. And same thing with Uncle Timmy, like just magical people. Like, you can't stop. We have kids that we got to also raise this next generation, and we got to, you know, we have to advocate and teach them to be strong and powerful and smart and, you know, to plow through the injustices of the world, regardless of what any white male politician or might have to say about it. Like, you know, we can't make change if we don't, you know, advocate and educate. And so I think that starts at home first and foremost. So that's kind of what fuels us, I think, around here. And it's hard, but we can't sweep it under a rug. It's happened. It's what's happened to us. It's how, you know, we navigate after that. And yeah, I'm very blessed to have very amazing people in my corner. My mom, my dad, you know, our friends, like our friend groups are so strong, and we just really rally around each other too. So I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed in that aspect. And to have people like you, unfortunately, you know, we're in this club together, and it's a shitty club to be in, but I'm thankful to have someone like you. And so I can reach out at any time, day or night, and know, like, if I'm spiraling or I'm in a situation, like, you've got my back. We're going to talk through it. And it takes a village. And you hear that a lot when it comes to raising children, but it takes a village to get through life too.
It does. And I will always answer your texts. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow Teachers Unify to End Gun Violence on Instagram and Threads at Teachers Unify, and follow the podcast on both platforms at Teachers Unify PC.